Congratulations.
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the base number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
I'm right next to a window. Okay, we got so many fucking announcements.
So many announcements.
At the Growlery, they have a show. Shirin Bahar Demirel, All That Lingers, April 21st through May 11th. And the reception is April 21st from 7 to 10 p.m. And the Growlery, if you haven't been there, go check it out at 235 Broderick Street, right out here in San Francisco.
Did you mention the, and there's an Angela Hennessy show coming up at the Growlery too? Let me get
that
to
one
it.
Is also April 21st through May 30th.
Angela Hennessy's show is entitled Black Holes. Holes.
L in a parenthesis.
Right. Black yep. Holes.
Phenomenal. And the reception for that, 7 to 10, April 21st. Okay, we got another email from Isis Hakanos, the Midway Gallery. Have you heard of that one, Mason?
I've heard of it, but I haven't been there.
They're having a dinner party inside a three-dimensional version of...
Oh, cool. One of her paintings. Painting.
Yeah. And that's going to be Wednesday, April 18th.
That's my birthday, everyone. I won't be there, Isis, but happy birthday to you.
Happy Mason's birthday. There's some tickets still available for this dinner thing.
And it's limited space, so really get on that if you're interested in having dinner in a three-dimensional
painting.
It's
gourmet, guys. And I'll put a link to that in the underworld if I remember. Also, Gibson Art Projects, they're having a panel called Duchamp for Painters, and that's Wednesday, also April 18th from 7 to 9.
So many things on my birthday.
At the Pauline Kael Jess Murals House. God, I gotta go to that.
I know,
sorry,
can we go
Ruben,
together?
We're really fucking life up. Well, that's your birthday again.
No, I'm not going to that. But I want to go to the house.
Ruben, we're really fucking up and we apologize. Okay, ready
it's
for
okay,
some...
It's okay, Ruben. We're giving you lots of cred here.
We love you, Ruben. I wanted to call him Ruby.
Ruby. We already talked about this one. It's coming up though real soon. Next Friday, April 20th, Future Farmers Out of Place in Place opening night party at YBCA. Oi.
Oh, Kala's got their auction coming up. I want to say it's on like the 21st.
You know what? That's not good enough.
I can't tell you how much amazing work is in that auction, guys.
Shit, I want
to
go.
And not just art, but also some other things like season tickets to the Shotgun Players in Berkeley and stuff like that for really, really cheap prices. So please get out there and support Kala.
All right.
Doing a residency right there, right now.
Well, there is a mayoral, one of the last sort of mayoral town halls here
There's
in San Francisco.
There's been a million of those, huh?
There's been a million and one. I haven't been to any.
Did you
Isn't
pick?
Isn't that shocking?
Well, Jane Kim was on KQED today on their show Political Breakdown.
Oh, really?
And I think they've had some other guests on, and that's also a podcast. So if you want to look it up and listen to the recording,
yeah, let's do that.
But God, it's not, it's like if we had her on where, I mean, you would have hard hitting questions, obviously, but they were like, what's your favorite music?
Oh, I hate that.
she really was going hard, how you were saying, for like cleaning, street cleaning.
I'm just a little bit like, really? I don't get it.
Is she just trying to like play to the middle or?
I don't know. They're all doing that. They're all talking about cleaning the streets.
We got bigger fish to fry,
I'm
guys.
Like, guys, really?
I mean, yeah, that's important, but like, how about like having places for people to live?
Or maybe like employ more people to clean the streets. Like, do we need to really talk about it? I don't know.
Her plan seemed to involve like creating jobs, kind of, because she has this pit stop initiative where there's like basically traveling bathrooms. And they have like an attendant. So at least one person per
So is
thing.
She relating dirty streets to homelessness? Like what
yeah.
is that?
No,
is
yeah,
that
she
what
is.
That's what that is. Okay.
Yeah.
So I just feel like the focus of that is kind of fucked up or skewed. Because to me it should be more about housing and getting people off the streets than about cleaning the streets. You know what I mean? Like it's sort of like, really? So yeah, that's on Saturday, April 14th, there's a mayoral candidate town hall at the Calvary Baptist Church. Here in San Francisco, it's kind of in the deep south part of the city, like what's that called? Like the outer Excelsior, like I think Vistacon Valley. No,
Visitation Valley.
Well, is that part of the city? It's like very. It's almost Daly City South. So look that up, Calvary Baptist Church. Saturday from 1:30 to 3:30. CCA, their MFA shows have started. Did you know?
Good Lord.
Good Lord. They're already on number two.
Oh, no.
Number two. CCA 2018 MFA number two starts on Saturday, Minnesota Street Project. They're having their reception there. It'll be up for, I think, a week or so. Go check it out. That's from 3 to 6. There's this kind of interesting show that our friend Manoush emailed me about. It's called Women Eco-Artists on Imagining Sanctuary.
Oh, cool.
Which I was like, oh, that's an interesting potential conversation, I'd say. And that's happening on Sunday, April 15th from 4 to 6 at the Islamic Cultural Center of Northern California. I believe that's in Oakland. So, yeah, there's some stuff. Oh, it's like also Monday, there's like a million things, right? Monday night.
Why?
Fucking Angela Davis is speaking at Berkeley.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Angela Hennessy and Marvin K. White are speaking at, they're having a conversation at the African American Art and Culture Complex that evening. And there's also a reading series happening with Kevin Killinan, Claudia LaRocco, and Tongo Eisen-Martin over at the lab.
Oh, he's good.
Yeah. So there's all this stuff happening Monday night of all nights. I love it. Everyone chose Monday because like, that's the night nothing's happening.
That's so
funny.
And
it's like, now everything's happening. I totally get that. It's hard to schedule shit, you guys. Don't forget to do your taxes, if you do your taxes. And I, you know, encourage you to write fuck you on your forms if you want.
Go for it.
Do whatever you need to do.
No one's getting audited this year, so it's a freebie.
But, yeah, I hope you get money back. I hope you don't have to pay any money.
Listener feedback, here we go. Oh, by the way, we were gone last week. We wanted to teach you all a lesson about patience. Okay, our listener said, hello. I'm just listening to Amy LeDuc's interview where she talked about how it's the worst when artists are late. I agree. As an artist who has been forced to work a corporate job to pay my student loans, I no longer have time for that shit.
Damn, girl. Damned person.
Also, I have a hot piece of gossip on that subject, an example of worst case scenario that you can share but can't use this person's name.
But I guessed it.
I bet you did. I work at a beauty brand company, and she is one of the founders of one of our brands. The first high-level meeting they had as a company with her, a huge team flew down to LA, rented out a restaurant, and were ready to meet for a morning meeting at 10 or 11 a.m. They ordered breakfast, etc., as you can imagine, and had a spread of makeup samples to show her. Noon goes by. 3 p.m., 7 p.m., still no show. I know, right? They keep hearing from her handler. She is on her way. Finally, she shows up at midnight.
Damn.
The meeting goes all night until 7 a.m.
What the fuck?
24 hours.
Why do you need a 7-hour meeting for one? That's bullshit.
So those people were out for more than 24 hours straight in that restaurant for the entire day. I can't tell if that is a power play or if she was actually self-sabotaging the meeting. Thoughts?
She did say in a later email, or our listener did say in a later email, that someone at the meeting said that the client was very nice and present when she finally did show up. They also thought, this is someone she works with, they also thought that she was being managed poorly, so the lateness wasn't 100% her fault.
Yes. I mean, I have never had that bad of an experience.
This must have been some kind of celeb, because no one's going to get away with being that fucking late. I have had a recent experience, multiple experiences, where an artist I was working with showed up quite late, either not so late, not past the event time, but past the time we said we were going to meet to sort of prepare for the event. And that just causes a lot of stress. The person is lovely. Of course nothing's intentional, right? Like, but it's just sort of like, how do you plan for that? I mean, you're kind of the opposite, where you show up ages early.
Being late, just thinking about this right now is giving me acid reflux.
Kate's like tapping her feet, shifting around, she's moving around so much she just can't handle it.
I have been late to things, especially in grad school. I was a real mess. And it just makes me feel so, I still feel bad for every time
I was late or fucked up
like that. I still have so much guilt about it. But I like, in my ideal world, I'm like an hour early to any commitment I have.
Yeah. Is that a good thing for you?
No.
No.
Nothing's a good thing, Maisie.
Okay.
But it's good to be on time. It's good to feel prepared.
Yeah, I think that's kind of it. Like when you're rushing and you're late, then it sort of takes, you have all this, you need to take some time to like get back into yourself and be like, okay, now I'm ready. But it's too late to be ready, you know?
Okay, Maysoon, we went to the event of the season.
Feminist curatorial practices, a roundtable convening.
I love a convening. Let's tell the people who the panelists were. You got Victoria.
Should we read the little descript? Nah.
No. Here's who were the panelists, okay? You got Victoria Brooks, curator from the motherfucking Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute.
Yep.
She was great. Okay, go on. Let's just list them up. Hold your applause till the end.
Okay, Johanna Burton from the New Museum.
Yeah, in their education department.
Yep.
But she's curated all over the place, including a really good show at The Hammer, which is like one of my favorite shows she ever did. Okay.
She seemed pretty cool.
Adrian Edwards from the Walker Center.
Ann Elgood from UCLA, Hammer Museum.
You got Rita Gonzalez from fucking LACMA.
Fucking LACMA. We got Henriette Holdish from MIT List Visual Arts Center.
You got Unji Ju from SF MoMA.
SF motherfucking MoMA. We got Tina Kukielski from Art 21.
So is she just does that whole thing?
Well, I don't know what that is because I thought Art 21 was a video.
Yeah. Okay. And then you got Kim Nguyen from Wattis, who's the new... Okay, remember that British guy who was there? Jamie?
Okay.
The blonde British guy?
No.
She's replacing him.
I see. Yeah. So is Anthony still there?
Yes.
Okay. So Anthony's like the director, and then they have a curator.
Right.
Okay, got it.
Finally.
And then we have Solvig...
Ovstebo.
Solvig Ovstebo from the Renaissance Society over there at University of Chicago.
What's up with that, Maysoon? Because you're from Chicago.
Yep, that's on the south side of Chicago. I've been to the Renaissance Society once, and I think I might be mistaking it with another small museum down there. But I want to say it's the place where they have like artifacts from ancient cultures, which doesn't make sense because it sounds like there's a contemporary space too. So now I'm confused, and now I feel confused.
I was confused by her presentation. So how they ran it is each person, since there's 400 of them, came up and just very briefly spoke about what they each had one image. And it started off with that Sara DiCenzio, who wasn't on here, was she?
No.
Who runs the organizer. Matrix program over there at BAMPFA.
It started with Julia, let's be honest.
Oh, well, yeah. Julia Bryan Wilson, head of the Arts Research Center over there at UC Berkeley, was the host and moderator of this panel. She's the best.
She's pretty good.
I wish
so
it was
sweet.
Just a panel of her.
She remembered my name, and I felt very touched by that.
Of course she did, Maysoon.
Well, I mean, I just imagine someone like Julia Bryan Wilson is meeting a million people.
She's internationally famous.
All the time. Right.
But she's basically the best in her field.
And I've only really, we interviewed her that one time, but I often feel like people we've interviewed don't remember me anyhow.
But Apsara DiCenzio kind of started off the presentations with a slide, including an image of protesters at the Women's March.
At the Women's March. Can I just quickly? And
that seemed like kind of the like starting point for everything.
Right. I was trying to get it, like the way I've been describing the panel today, it sounded like Apsara was really inspired by the women's movement and like, the Women's March, excuse me. And, you know, not inspired by Trump being elected, but kind of like feeling the fire under her ass about like, we got to do something here. And then the Women's March happened. And it sounded like she was trying to almost get together like a national sort of league of like women curators to address issues of the institution and how they're like, right?
Is that what she said about that? Because it seemed to me more like, let's curate radical shows, not like let's address the inherent fucked upness of the institutions we're in.
I guess maybe that is part of the conversation through like the curation.
Okay.
Maybe? I don't know.
I just felt like from her talk and her bring up the motherfucking pussy hats. She brought up the pussy hats and I was like, okay, this is off to a rocky start. I liked where she was coming from. I respect her as a woman and as a professional.
Yes.
But I was off as soon as it got into the Women's March and the pussy hats. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, this is a, you know. And then after that, each speaker came up and showed one slide and people talked about kind of the problems with feminism itself, like inside of feminism, yeah. that feminism hasn't always represented all women.
Well, and some struggles. People talked about that particular yeah. aspect of it, and those were the ones that kind of stuck with me the most, yes. I guess.
And like, so Eunji Do went up there. She was towards the end, and she's like, basically, okay, they videotaped this, so I'm sure video is going to be available online because they're That'd really be great. Good about stuff like that.
There were just so many of them, but there was very little that was. There were there few wasn't things yeah, they that hardly were got said, to anything. But there was very little that was.
But there was a lot of theatricality,
so especially anyhow, from Eunji. I was like, "Damn, girl!"
So Eunji Do goes up there, and she's like, "I'm not showing a slide because I believe, you know, images are about representation, and feminism doesn't represent anyone."
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't clear. She was basically like, fuck. I mean, she was basically like, fuck feminism. She didn't say it didn't do
and
anything.
And there's a common, I mean, that's a common critique. There's a common critique of feminism that it's serving like a specific demographic of like the white,
rich women,
you know, yeah. fairly wealthy women or like well-off Straight. Women. Yeah. yeah.
So anyhow, and I get that, but she didn't really make clear like what her issues with feminism
See,
were.
See that, yeah. But there was only 2 minutes for her to say something. And so that was a little disappointing because she came up
But she didn't use all her time.
She came to the podium, like didn't have a slide, made some like very, maybe it wasn't feminism hasn't done anything for me, but some like very, what's
caustic
caustic statement period yeah. like drop mic style
yes
you know what I mean and then said a few things but didn't kind of go into that and we were all kind of like everyone else had talked about feminism and the role it played for them or how they were thinking about it or whatever like critical or non-critical and then she just didn't get into
She's
it
just like fuck feminism I have no slide because this slide is empty just like feminism is empty
yeah.
And so that was intense and then but there were some great I also thought that Kim Nguyen had a fucking great she really went into some deep shit of also showing like white women at one of the slut walks, you know, where women walk like without clothes on, basically against yes. rape. And
holding
and
a sign.
And there were women that had one with, you know, the John Lennon lyric.
The sign said N-word. Women are the N of the world.
Right.
The N, capital N of the world.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Which is from a John Lennon song. And then it turned out like Yoko Ono.
A
actually,
John Lennon and Yoko Ono song.
Yeah. That yeah. she like coined that. And like, so that's all fucked up. And she got into the fucked up intersectional issues within yeah. feminism.
Yeah.
And I thought she was like really on point.
Yeah.
I also thought that Rita Gonzalez, she had a lot of like nuanced, thoughtful things to say, I thought too, in her thing.
And so, Henrietta Huldish was the one who was talking about like sort of neo-capitalism need to bring the whole shit down.
Yeah.
Which is kind of exciting because no one else sort of
yes.
element in.
So yeah, there was also a lot of criticism of like women in Hollywood being like fakey activists. And I was like, dude, we don't have to look at Hollywood to see like symbolic gestures of bullshit.
Yeah.
Like we can definitely
that's
do
that's
that.
The whole armchair activism thing.
Look yeah. at the art world and see yeah. the exact same shit.
Yeah.
So I thought that was sketchy. Anyhow, then it turns over the panel of these like 8 million women. And it was so funny because Rennie Pritikin was, it was a star-studded audience. You got Margaret Tedesco. You got Dina Beard was
you
there.
You got Frank Schmiegel.
Frank Schmiegel. You got the SF MoMA clique.
Tons
over
of SF
here.
MoMA people.
And sure enough, Rennie Pritikin is like leaving in the middle of it. And
well, kind of right when they got to the panel.
Yeah. Which is fine. He's got shit to do. Whatever. Totally. Maybe he's hungry. So then Eunji Do hops up out of her chair as she's actively on the panel.
On the stage.
And she gets up, hugs him, walks him out of the room.
Well, and no, she hugs him. They start chatting right there in the fucking room. And then she finally has like the like, we should walk out of here.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you should. It was pretty fucking funny.
That was hilarious. She was really like very entertaining
to
me.
I felt quite sure that we should interview her real soon.
Yeah. Okay, so I was like really hyped up by her because she was being so weird. And then hyped up by a lot of this stuff. But like I don't feel like anything really that rad was said. Except
no.
one of them, I think it was Henrietta, right? Brought up like we need to pay artists. Like one of the things I'm thinking about is like paying artists
yeah.
and you know, having equity in that way.
Yeah.
And I clapped and hollered.
Yeah. That
Loved
was
that.
Henrietta.
People
yeah.
clapped. I'm very disappointed in myself that I didn't say anything about staff. Did somebody bring up like...
Someone did bring up, because I think, I can't remember who, someone brought up the whole issue of, I think with the baby, it was Henrietta who was, first of all, throughout the night, everyone profusely thanked all the people who were involved in putting the event on.
Every panel is
I was like
that.
stop, we know, I don't know, it's fine, but I'm like, you have precious time here,
can we just like everybody like high five at the beginning or like put all their hands in a circle, yeah, like, and then raise them up and thank you, yeah, and then exactly. they don't then, have to say it, and then every person who goes up doesn't have to be like do the cascade of thanks.
But I do think someone brought up like maybe it was Henrietta when she's talking about artist wage, but also like staff wage, like staff needing to be. I think
because I feel like
someone
staff were overlooked.
They
That's
are
how
definitely
I felt
overlooked.
At the end. I was like, you know, because then somebody I was talking.
But then one of Julia's questions, right? Didn't she ask the question of like, just with all the recent firings of women curators across the country?
Yeah.
Like, and no one responded. No one had really much to say to that.
Basically, I think Julia was trying to get at like, Do people feel like they can't be politically vocal in their jobs because of these women getting fired?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Do they feel like they're going to be penalized in some way because of that?
But then I was talking to somebody after and I was like, damn, I'm not going to say who, but I was like, one of these women, I was really exciting. I want to hear more from her.
Yeah.
And that person was like, you know, I've talked to staff of hers and she's mistreats her staff.
Yeah.
Okay, so the staff, I felt like that could have been talked about more. And also like, so there was a woman in the audience from the Mission Cultural Center.
Oh yeah.
Who kind of got up and was talking about like smaller venues and like making things accessible and like understandable to different audiences.
Well, just also like, you know, she said like some cultures don't grow up going to museums.
Exactly.
Like that's not, I was sitting behind my friend and colleague Jackie M, who was like, make museums fucking free.
Yeah.
Like, duh. I mean, these fucking spaces are so expensive. Of course, they're not going to be accessible or even inviting to many people in
exactly.
the world, you know?
And that was the other thing that was kind of like a funny, I don't know if it was ironic or what, because I've been brainwashed by Alanis Morissette. But that it's Ungie was the one who was like, fuck this, you can say fuck you if you think an artist is fucked up, you can refuse to work with them, like blah blah blah.
Yeah,
but like SF MoMA is the most fucked up museum in the mix.
That's what I kept thinking. I'm like, how is she gonna contend with fucking SF MoMA? It's like, that seems so hard.
I mean,
I don't even know.
It's $25 to get in. 37 of the 900 floors are dedicated to one rich couple's art collection that is like
primarily white men.
Exactly. And it's like, dude, get in there.
Well, she's in there. I mean, let's see what she does.
Okay.
Right?
Well, but hasn't she been there for like a year or more now?
Yeah, I guess so. Because I think she got hired right as I was leaving, but hadn't started yet.
That place needs to be.
But, you know, the shit there is planned out years in advance. So whatever her mark isn't going to be seen.
Well, but
for
like, it's not
year.
Just that's the thing. I'm like, it's not just about curating shows. It's like about like how you operate as a person in an organization.
The curators are not, they have nothing to do with,
I don't know, she's like a high profile person. Like they're not asking like the fucking,
she is, but she's,
you know,
also
people that work
she
at the ticket booth to come be on a panel where you're talking to like all the fucking hot shots in your field, you know what I mean?
Look, here's what I have to say about that. She is a high fucking profile hot shot and awesome and deserves recognition for everything she's done. But as far as I'm concerned, and maybe I'm wrong in this, she's expendable like every other staff member at SF MoMA.
They also taught, you know, it was brought up, of course, also that like these people are answering to boards of directors. Like it's not like they, you know, it's not like they have complete autonomy. They have like tons of people above them pulling the strings.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about that because that felt kind of like a cop out. I couldn't, you know what I mean? Just like, oh, well, we have other people who are actually in control. And it's like, well, you know, how do you influence those that like that level also? Like, how do you get involved with those people and try to change their perspective? Or I don't know. It felt a little bit like, yes, but I was a little.
Maybe it's good that they all got together like that and now they all can like fucking quit. And then it's like all the curators of every major museum has quit all at once.
And what would they do?
I don't know.
Rule the world.
Fly up into the sky.
Anyhow, so this convening started with this sort of little panel discussion that was very quick and short. But all of the women, all of the curators who are in town were here through the rest of the week. And I think they're going to be like going deep into it. And I'm excited about that. I mean, I'm just sort of curious to know like what comes of it. I'm curious to know if there's any. Julia, I think in her intro, or maybe Apsara, I'm not sure, one of them talked about a reading list. Oh, and yeah. I'm like, I want to get a hold of that reading list. I'd love to know what they were reading, like in preparation for this weekend or this week with them together. I mean, you know, whatever. Rita Gonzalez mentioned this. I can't remember this bridge called My Back.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember?
You've never heard of that?
No.
Oh, my God. That's classic old feminist shit.
So I was like, I want to read that. That sounds great.
Speaking of reading May soon. Okay, there's a new book out called Your Art Will Save Your Life by Beth Pickens.
Oh, yeah.
It's out from Feminist Press. Have you been hearing about this? It's blowing up. Sure. Anyhow, check that book out.
You just ordered it?
Just ordered it. I'll give you a hot take. Mason, did you have anything else about that panel, which was the event of the season?
Of the season, kind of.
JK, there's plenty of other events in the season.
Yeah. There was this comment about, do you know what happened at the Whitney Biennial from 1983 with Thelma Golden? Do you know that story?
No, tell me.
I don't know the story, but this is another thing I wrote down.
Look it up. Okay, so from our exhaustive research of reading two articles, turns out, okay, so Thelma Golden was the curator, right, at the Whitney
for
the
93
Whitney Biennial.
Right.
And it was like a turning away from all the usual straight white guys that they usually show in that shit.
That's
and
what
having
it sounds like.
Artists of color and women artists and queer artists. And apparently it was like very panned by the critics.
Yeah.
Basically saying, like, here's the LA Times article from March 10th, 1993 by Christopher Knight. Basically saying, crushed by its good intentions, under the banner of opening up the institutional art world to expansive diversity, the Whitney Biennial has, in fact, perversely narrowed its scope to an almost excruciating degree.
Wow.
Now, here's the article where she's, like, reflecting on her time at the Studio Museum in Harlem.
Oh, cool.
And the article is, like, broad critical acclaim for the watershed exhibition she curated at the Whitney, most notably Black Male Representations of Masculinity in Contemporary American Art, and the 1993 Whitney Biennial, which she worked on alongside three other curators, came late. So it was like, at the time, like a shat upon terribly. And then later on, people came around to it. In 93, they're like, fuck you.
Fuck you.
Then sure enough, who comes a knocking but Jerry Saltz has since called that biennial the moment in which today's art world was born. What do you say to that, Mason?
Well, when did that happen? Like, how long did that take for her to get that kind of recognition, you know?
Well, that Jerry Saltz comment was from an article in 2013.
Well, that's fucking long time.
20 years later.
I'm sure it didn't happen that much later, but that's still like...
Well, I mean, I'm sure tons of people were on board. It just wasn't the people that were writing for fucking newspapers.
Right.
I don't know, man. There was also a lot of talk on the panel just generally about like, man, shit is really fucked up. But then people also trying to like, Johanna Burton was trying to kind of inject some positivity and be like, you know, things actually have gotten a lot better. I really want to talk to Undie Ju about what the hell she was saying about, you know, just feeling like rejecting feminism. She was like, feminism is not my mission. And if she would have just said, because it's not inclusive of like trans and racial struggle.
Right.
You know.
Right.
If she just would have explicitly said that.
Yeah.
You know. Final thoughts from the whole panel thing. Everyone was in black completely.
It's true.
Except for Rita from LACMA was wearing argyle, but a dark argyle. And where does everyone get their clothes? Some people had some wild clothes.
Does
everybody get their infinity scarves? Does everybody go to the same place in their funny pants?
I got mine at H&M. It's cheap.
Do you think people get all their like stuff handmade?
If they have the money, they should.
Remember the people being like talking about all the discussions they're having within their institutions about like, do we need to take down art by artists that are fucked up?
Oh.
Like Carl Andre and like you know, people that are rapists and fucked up people.
Wait, did that come up
like
with
since the Me Too movement? Yes. And basically somebody basically posited or whatever that if you find out that an artist is a horrible person, the art they've made is bad. And that kind of blew my mind because I hadn't heard that argument before. Like, yeah. I've heard plenty of like,
I think Unji said that.
Well, she said, like, if you always have the right to say, I'm not going to work with someone.
Sure.
It doesn't matter if they're the hottest shit in town. Like, you can say, no, I'm not going to work with, a rapist or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was valid. But the whole thing about, like, because I've heard plenty of people be like, you know, there's plenty of good people making work. Yeah. Like, that's good work.
Yeah.
Like, so why can't we show that? But not saying, like, once someone has been identified as, like, a horrible person.
Yeah.
An abuser, that their work is bad. Like, I really hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
I feel like the general consensus is always, like, you know, the work can be good outside of the creator.
That's definitely been the general consensus, right? For sure. That, like, you know, can you separate the work from the from the artist? And for the longest time, I think our society has been okay to do that, right?
It's
yeah, we can do that. We're just looking at
the work. I think that's interesting. I mean, I'm down to take all the fucking assholes of the world's art out and say, fuck you, do it. But I mean, I just wonder. First off, I have no power to do that, so it's easy for me to say that because I can just sit up in my tower and, like, say whatever I want.
Yeah.
Do people really fathom how much work has to leave? Like, Caravaggio, fucking Rodin was a shithead. You know, I mean, a lot of work is going to be gone if that purge happens, you know?
I'm not totally fine with that, I guess. I need to spend more time thinking about, I mean... I don't know.
I mean, do you think about, because, like, Caravaggio is also dead. Like,
yes.
I don't know, but then who benefits from, like, his estate and stuff like that? You know what I mean? Because I'm also, like, there's artists alive right now that are doing amazing things in paint with, like, light and dark and stuff. And, like,
yeah,
which is,
totally.
Like, as a student, like, a painting student looking at Caravaggio, you, like, get something out of seeing that work, like, about technique and stuff.
I guess, like, it's hard for me to kind of dismiss the history of the work that's been out there, even if the people were fucking awful. I don't know. I just
Caravaggio killed a guy.
Do we know? Like, do we know why?
No, I don't remember. Or, like, you know, Chuck Close, Carl Andre, like, you know,
Carl Andre. I'm cool with getting rid of all this shit
because we can just make our own. We'll go grab some tiles,
get
at
some
Home Depot,
some big pieces of wood, pile it up, do a little like.
JK, we're also boycotting Home Depot. But point is, Maysoon. I just really wish I was at the time that was being brought up in the panel. I was really looking to Julia because I was like, as a historian, that has to kind of crunch a little.
Yeah,
because she has a whole chapter in her first book, Artworkers, about Carl Andre. But she talks about Anna Mendieta and the murder and all that shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it wasn't just like a celebration of Carl Andre. It was like his role in like a historical moment in the Vietnam War protest artists and stuff. I don't know. That was like, I thought that would have been a good panel in itself.
Yeah, definitely. And I also feel like it's tricky because I feel like you often hear about, and this is a stereotype, but I think there's like some truth to this, that artists like historically have often been like troubled souls, right?
Right.
And that sort of trouble informs their work in a way that maybe someone who is less troubled, whether it be from mental illness or who knows what, might have a very different way of expressing that visually through writing or whatever. So
plenty of artists that were completely bonkers that didn't rape anyone. Like,
sure.
You know, Van Gogh wasn't a creeper.
Like this sort of idea of erasing people because of something they've done that's terrible. I guess that feels like a very black and white way of looking at it. And I don't think it's I don't know. I think it's super complex. I think it's an important thing to talk about and to think about for sure.
But I think there's a difference between like, hey, maybe we shouldn't just like throw people in jail and let them, you know, have no access to any resources to ever get better versus people should be millionaires and be celebrated and have their work shown for all eternity. Like, those are, like, two very, like, yeah. You know what I mean?
No, I agree.
Like, it doesn't, taking someone's painting off the wall isn't the same as throwing them in jail.
I agree.
You know what I mean? And I also, it's like, what about the families and the people, the victims that have to go see this motherfucker on a banner for a museum show yeah. around their entire city? You know what I mean?
Yes, I agree. I also feel like we're in a very different time now than we were
in, like, Caravaggio 20
years,
time.
Well, even 20 or 30 years ago. Yeah. Well, maybe, right? And so I think, like, the stakes are much higher. People are being brought to, like, you know, people are being exposed, and all this shit's coming to surface, and I think it's great, and shit's going to shift. Like, it's no longer going to be okay, right? But I feel like for so long it was okay. And so that's, like, that to me is, like, also, that's, like, also a societal issue, right? Like, we should have been holding men accountable for their actions from the fucking beginning.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, like, now that it's all coming to light, but I just think it's, yes, I hear you. I don't think, and I agree that I don't think a lot of these people who have been coming out as...
I mean, what if we even just as a thought exercise imagined a museum with no sexual predators on display? You know what I mean? Like, what would that look like? How would it be different? Or imagine a world where that... Just to imagine.
Yeah.
Okay, that's your homework for the week, listener. Okay, Mason, you got a trivia question for him? I'm looking for the name of an artwork here, okay?
Okay.
This was the first piece of public art funded by a corporation right out here in San Francisco, built in 1985. And I'll give you a little hint. It's dedicated to the memory of Eric Hoffer, who was a longshoreman, poet, and philosopher.
Okay, so it's something on the Embarcadero.
Maysoon, don't give the answers.
But that was a good clue. What year?
1985, the year of my birth. That's a great question. And people answer it, and you know what the prize is. We'll do anything you want. Within reason.
Yeah.
So give us a call, 419-351-6606, or you can email us congratulationspinetree@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at Pine Tree Podcast. Maysoon, are you heading up our old Facebook page since I deleted my Facebook account?
Oh shit, am I supposed to be doing that? I can try.
Okay, you get in there, girl. Zuckerberg has been on trial over there doing a deposition for Congress. It has been a laugh riot.
I think we can take CPT off of Facebook. Fuck them.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. So let's just do, from now on, at the end of the show, let's do our lessons learned. Lessons learned. Number one, Julia Bryan Wilson never lets me down. I celebrate her every day.
My lesson learned is don't fucking be an asshole to people. Don't be a creeper.
Don't be a dick to your staff either. Like, yep. There's all ranges of being a terrible person, and try to minimize them in all aspects of your life.
True that. I also want to encourage people, and I try to do this too. It's like, try to just compassion.
Yeah, for everybody.
For everyone. Just try a little bit.
Try some tenderness?
Try some tenderness. It's hard. There's a lot of fucking dickwads out there.
Big time. And life is hard.
I'm going to give that person the benefit of the fucking doubt, even though they almost ran me over. You know, that kind of stuff. Just try it out. It's helpful. It's actually helpful to not be, like, pissed all the time. Yeah.
And I'm going to be thinking about that from the bridge.
To the other bridge.
To the island in between. This has been...
Congratulations, Pine Tree.